Right. How do we do this again? Hello, everyone, and welcome to That Time When, the podcast about strange things that happened in history. I'm your host, Barnaby King, and joining me is my co-host, Amelia Edwards.
Hello.
Hello. It's been a hot minute, hasn't it?
It's been several months.
Indeed. We went away on honeymoon and then we're busy, but we're back. We're
we
back,
are.
Baby. Just in time for me to start my law course again. Strangely enough, it probably would have been better for me if we'd started earlier, but you know.
Hey, hey.
Just how things go sometimes. Speaking of our honeymoon, we went to a number of different places, didn't we?
We did. Let's boast about all our wealth.
No.
So that people can dox us on the internet and work out where we live.
No, I wasn't. I was just going to say that it meant that us being the kind of middle-aged people that we apparently are.
Absolute nerds.
Yeah. We got to learn about a lot of history of different countries.
We did.
And one of the places we went to was South Korea.
It was.
So I have a story about South Korea for you today.
Okay.
It is a story involving espionage, murder, a cover-up, all the sort of things that should really appear on something like Serial.
Yeah.
Or any of those like true crime podcasts that are not really quite so popular anymore, but had a real thing going for them in like 2019, I feel.
I think it was lockdown times. Lockdown times, murder kicked off in a big way.
I think it was before
murder
that.
Murder kicked off.
Murder kicked off.
Murder podcast kicked off.
I think it was a bit before that, though. I think people started getting interested and I think that's why stuff like Tiger King became popular.
Oh, that's true. I guess I think of that as a lockdown thing as well, because it was.
Well, I mean, it was a lockdown thing, but I think one of the reasons was that people, you know, were primed for intrigue and mysteries, and it did have a feel of like a true crime podcast.
Yeah, just that's true.
In TV show format.
Yeah.
So we are going right on that zeitgeist of several years ago.
Oh, yeah, we really love to be up to date.
Yeah, exactly.
Historically.
Exactly, yes.
That's why I wear a bustle and a wimple at all times.
You do have a bustle, don't you?
No.
No, you have a petticoat.
I've got two petticoats.
You have two petticoats, Jesus Christ.
But not a crinoline yet.
Oh,
one day.
Okay. We are going to go back to the Cold War.
Ooh.
A time of great tension between North and South Korea.
Mm.
I know that, you know, tensions between North and South Korea are pretty much always high. But
well, the Cold War created North and South Korea,
well,
didn't it? More or less.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Korean War did, and then, you know, it just kind of spiraled out from there.
Yeah, I guess.
And the Korean War was one of the earliest sort of parts of the Cold War, I guess.
1950s.
Yeah. You start having the two fronts sort of being set up.
Mm-hmm.
We learned a lot about the Korean War, but that's not what we're talking about today. We're going a little bit later on, actually.
Okay. Back to the 1990s. History times.
Actually quite close.
Okay.
It was 1987.
That's not history.
Shush.
I know we've done that a lot, but
yes,
that's very recent.
It is, but, you know, this is a good story.
Okay.
And besides, people study the Cold War in history classes. You did, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah. So, shut your mouth.
Sorry. The rabbit's attacking my foot. I don't know why. She's so violent.
Hey, Belle.
She was pushing me out of the way.
Oh, what a good girl.
And I was like, that doesn't feel like normal buffing. Because it wasn't. It's Pearl.
Okay, so we are going back to January the 7th, 1987.
Mm-hmm.
And the family of a South Korean woman called Susie Kim.
Okay.
Susie was her nickname.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. It's a very westernized name, that.
Yeah. Well, her family are watching the news and they see something pretty bad.
Okay.
So they find out two things.
Mm-hmm.
One, that Susie has disappeared.
Oh my God. Oh, I thought Susie was like with her children.
No,
are
no,
we
no,
talking
no,
about
no.
like her parents?
Her
and
extended
whatnot.
Family. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Her siblings, her parents. Yeah. So they're watching the news and they find out, one, that Susie has disappeared.
Yeah.
And two, that Susie has been outed as a North Korean spy.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Wait, but they're South Korean?
Yes.
Okay.
Her husband, Yoon Tae-shik, has appeared on TV and he is teary-eyed and dishevelled and he tells his story. He and Susie Kim were living in Hong Kong, and a few days prior to her disappearance, the two of them had had a strange visit from two Korean men.
Okay.
Tae-shik explained that his wife told him to go out and buy cigarettes while she spoke with the men.
Right.
And he was like, all right, bit weird, but, you know, keep the little woman happy, or whatever.
I guess.
The equivalent is.
You've got to keep your woman updated with cigarettes or whatever.
Yeah. But when he came back, having presumably bought the cigarettes, she and the two men were gone.
Right. Okay.
And he then receives a phone call saying that his wife would be sold into prostitution unless he fly to Singapore and go to a particular address.
Oh my god.
He decides that, you know, he's going to do this because he doesn't want anything bad to happen to his wife. So he gets on a plane, he goes to Singapore, and he discovers that the address that he's being sent to is actually the North Korean embassy.
Right.
He discovered that his wife had defected to the North and the whole kidnapping thing was a ruse to kidnap him and try and turn him against the South.
Could you kidnap someone by just getting them to go into your embassy? Like, back in those days? Was that a thing?
I don't know. Maybe it was basically like, if he gets there, then they'll just basically secrete him away and disappear him, basically.
I suppose.
Yeah, which is not beyond the realm of possibility.
It's not. It seems a little on the obvious side, though.
Well, yeah, but, you know, that apparently is the plan.
All right, sure, why not?
So, Tae-shik is like, nah, I ain't doing this. And instead informs the authorities of everything that had happened. A few weeks later, though, on January the 24th, the Hong Kong police break into a hotel room after people have complained that there's a terrible smell there.
Oh, no.
They break in and are met by, you know, the rotting smell of death.
Yeah.
And under the bed, they find the corpse of Susie Kim.
Oh, gosh.
She'd been beaten, strangled with a belt, and then her body had been hidden underneath the bed.
Okay.
Now, the South Korean media speculated that she'd basically fled after failing to kidnap her husband.
Back to Hong Kong?
Yes. Because she was basically trying to run from her handlers or her superiors.
Okay.
Because failing the North means death.
Sure, yeah.
Presumably, she didn't get far enough and she was found and she was killed before she could reveal any, you know, North Korean secrets.
Okay, sure.
It was broadcast as a reminder that all good South Koreans should be vigilant against the insidious forces of the North and communism in general. The story was backed up by the Korean Central Intelligence Agency, the KCIA,
mm-hmm.
and Yoon Tae-shik appeared on many news conferences telling his story and basically kind of being a model citizen.
Right, okay. That is a wild story.
Yeah.
We have had wilder stories about the, well, I was about to say the CIA, but like any intelligence agencies during the Cold War.
This is true.
Like, I mean, we did a whole episode on the different ways they tried to kill Fidel Castro.
The brightly painted rock.
But yeah, that you'll never get past
that. I'll never get past that. It's so stupid.
But I mean, people did some bonkers stuff, and I could imagine that North Korea might be more bonkers than the rest.
Yeah.
They didn't have as much cash as the CIA to do bonkers stuff.
Well, yes, there is that.
So
they basically just turn a woman against her country and then get her to try and kidnap her husband.
Yep. I mean, it's stupid.
It is very stupid.
But, you know, I've heard dumber.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, unfortunately, there was quite a lot of bad things happened as a result of this, mostly to Susie Kim's family.
Oh, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
God, imagine people thinking that your daughter or sister was a defector to North Korea, which...
Yeah.
Also, why would you be a defector to North Korea?
I don't know.
It's the worst country to want to defect to.
You won't be saying that when we're conquered.
Oh, I think I still would be.
Well, anyway, just to bring things back down to a really sad level, the family was brutally interrogated over Susie's defection and who might have known what when. They were basically tortured. A number of them lost their jobs because, you know, they were ostracized. The young people in the family were bullied so badly that they had to drop out of school. And it basically just ruined the lives of many people.
Oh, God.
I believe the mother, Susie Kim's mother, ended up having a stroke and dying because of all the stress of the situation. But the family themselves kind of stood by Susie. They were basically like, no, this isn't true. None of this is true. We know Susie. She wouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
You know, something else must have happened. But the KCIA is basically like, no, she was a spy.
Okay.
And other agencies in the government basically start backing them up, being like, no, yeah, she was definitely a spy.
Okay.
Over the next 15 years, Yuen Tae-shik built a new life for himself. Admittedly, he did go to prison for 2.5 years for forgery.
Okay.
Unrelated to this. Despite that, though, he managed to get out and do well for himself. He became a venture capitalist in Seoul and chairman of a company called Pass 21, which built fingerprint detection software and was basically a worldwide success.
Okay.
He became really close with government bureaucrats, legislators, journalists, lots of the sort of movers and shakers.
Do you think this was as a result of having first come into the public eye?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think so. In fact, knowing what I know later on, I can guarantee 100% that that is what happened.
Okay. So his wife dies. He gets to be a CEO of somewhere.
Yep.
And given that this is career, presumably involved in the supernatural in some way.
That's such a specific thing. And it's only really for people who watch the sort of K-dramas that we do.
There's always a CEO.
There is, yes. Well, you might want to hold off on that because the thing about the CEOs in those shows you mentioned, they're nice. They're good people.
They are nice, mostly, yeah.
Yuen Tae-shik is not a good person.
Oh.
There were those who continued to doubt the story, basically be like, this makes no sense.
It is weird.
It is weird. And people are basically like, how would this have happened? How would she have defected? Who would she have spoken to? Like, none of this makes any sense.
Why would they have had two random guys? Like, why would her handlers only turn up once just before they tried to kidnap this guy?
Yeah. And then presumably again when they killed her back in Hong Kong.
I suppose, yes.
Well, yeah. There were many people who doubted the story, including the South Korean ambassador to Singapore, who actually, when the story first broke, tried to stop the KCIA from broadcasting the news conference, basically being like, something doesn't add up here. Please don't go ahead with this. And they were like, no, we're going ahead with it.
Oh, well, good for him.
There were also a number of police detectives who worked on the case who basically said the official story is a load of rubbish.
Yeah.
Now, just a quick note, South Korea has a statute of limitations for murder.
Oh, which, really?
Yeah. I don't know if they still do.
Okay.
But at this point, they did. And that statute of limitations was 15 years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's so short.
I know, right? Now, a few months before the 15th anniversary, I guess, of the death of Susie Kim, her husband is arrested for murder.
Before the statute of limitations is up.
Yay,
that's good.
And a conspiracy was revealed that involved many members of the South Korean government, including the president, the media, the KCIA and other intelligence agencies, and the police. Like, everyone was involved in a huge conspiracy.
Wow, okay.
Because Susie Kim was never a North Korean spy. Not in any way. I will say this, though. Her husband nearly was.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Was that what gave him the idea?
In a way, yes. Now, let's go back. Susie was born Kim Ok-bun in Chungju, which is about 70 miles southeast of Seoul, in 1952.
Okay.
She was the third of seven children, and she was nicknamed Susie at a pretty early age.
Oh, okay.
When she was about 15, though, her dad died, and this being, you know, South Korea at the time, he was the main breadwinner.
Yeah.
So she, having turned 15, had to go work.
Yeah.
She actually moved to Hong Kong because she tried to open a Korean restaurant.
Oh, okay.
At the age of 15, which, you know,
wow,
it's pretty ambitious.
In a different country at 15?
Yeah.
That's insanely ambitious.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Understandable.
The restaurant folded, and she ended up finding work as a bar hostess.
Okay.
She ended up marrying a Chinese man and had a daughter with him, Sonia, but later found out that he actually had another secret family.
What?
Yeah. So,
is this woman just insanely unlucky?
She is really unlucky, but she is sensible, because when she finds out that this guy has another family, she nopes out of there.
Good.
But it's a difficult time to be a single mother in
East Asia. In a foreign country, yeah. In East Asia. Yeah.
Yeah. In 1986, though, at the age of 34, so I think she was like by herself for a fair amount of time. I don't know. I couldn't find out when she married this Chinese man. But presumably there was a bit of a gap between her leaving him and Yun Tae-shik turning up in the story.
Okay.
But when she was 34, she met Yun Tae-shik.
Mm-hmm.
He was 6 years younger than her and had just moved to Hong Kong to seek his fortune.
Okay. And he tried to open up a Korean restaurant? No. She was like, don't do it, man. I know.
No, I think he had a bit of capital to start with, because it seems like they met because she was trying to rent a flat that he owned.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, there's a bit of capital there to begin with.
Sure.
They quickly get together and become engaged. And a month after they were married, they actually return to South Korea to visit Susie's family.
Okay.
And Susie's family are kind of like, Susie is different. She's not the person that we knew beforehand.
Because she's a North Korean spy.
Well, no. She's become a nervous chain smoker.
Oh, no.
Riddled with anxiety. And revealed that she had actually been contacted by an ex-partner of Yun Tae-shik, who told her that when they had been together, Tae-shik had beaten her.
Oh my god.
Yeah. She was apparently considering leaving Tae-shik.
Yeah.
But he wasn't going to have any of that, because he was there on business, not just to visit family, because he wanted to borrow the equivalent of $4,000 from Susie Kim's family in order to open a video store in Hong Kong.
Don't sound super wealthy.
No, I don't think they were. And I think that maybe Yun Tae-shik was either running out of money or had run out of money or didn't have as much as he thought he might have done. But basically, he's going to be like, hey, I've got a wife now. She's got a family. Yeah. I can, you know, hit the family up for money.
Great.
Because it's his dream to open a video store in Hong Kong. I don't know. This seems to have been like a really big thing for him. I don't know if maybe it was like a much bigger enterprise than I have in mind. But like, do you remember when we were young and you had like those tiny little video rental things that were like knockoff Blockbuster?
I actually don't. I used to go to Alldays.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like the co-op, roughly speaking, for you young people out there. But yeah, they used to have a little video rental thing in them.
See, I remember going to, there was one of the villages near where we used to live, used to have a tiny little rental place.
Yeah.
It was basically like two aisles, and it was, God, like a few meters long. To be fair, I remember having good selection.
I mean, maybe video rental was just much more of a sound investment in the 1980s.
Yeah, probably.
Than it even was in the 1990s.
Like, yeah.
We were sort of moving on from that kind of thing by then, and the internet had been invented.
Yeah, this is true. Well, it seems that this was ultimately one of the two main reasons for Tae-shik to marry Susie Kim. He basically wanted to have someone to be collateral, basically, or to be a bank, essentially.
Great, yes.
And he was also pleased with getting Susie Kim because she had Hong Kong citizenship. And he was basically like, cool, I can get an in there with the immigration authorities.
Oh, I don't like this man at all.
No.
He's a forger. He's probably beaten his first wife or ex-girlfriend or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not great.
Yeah. And unfortunately for him, Susie Kim was not as useful to his business schemes as he wanted her to be.
And because her family clearly had no money. Otherwise, she wouldn't have gone to Hong Kong at the age of 15.
Yeah. And I don't think the citizenship was really as useful as he was hoping.
No.
So apparently the two would often fight. And during one of these fights, things got out of hand and Taishik ended up murdering Suzy Kim.
Oh my God.
He beat her and strangled her with a belt.
Damn.
Fearing prosecution, he fled to Singapore.
Sure.
To try and seek sanctuary with the North Korean embassy.
Oh my God. That's what he was doing there.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so dumb.
Yeah. They turned him away.
That's also really embarrassing. Imagine being turned down by the North Koreans.
I know, right? That was my thought as well. It's like, you feel like if someone from the South wants to go to the North, they would snap up that opportunity.
Yeah, you'd be like, look at how dreadful... Like, wouldn't you use him as a propaganda tool? And
exactly.
Be like, look how dreadful capitalism is. It's driven this man away.
But even they were like, nah, this man's a dick. We don't want him.
Oh, that's so embarrassing.
Yeah. But the whole thing does inspire him to come up with this ridiculous spy story of his wife secretly being a North Korean spy, trying to kidnap him, everything like that. So he goes and tells the authorities that his wife has disappeared and all this stuff happened.
Right.
And they put him at the news conference.
Okay.
Shortly afterwards, though, the KCIA then interrogate him.
Yeah. And it becomes really obvious that he's lying because he's not great.
Yeah. Because they find the body of Suzy Kim and they're basically like, so that story that you told us. And he's basically like, yeah, it's a lie.
Yep.
And he just admits to the KCIA of what happened. He talks quite frankly about murdering her and also about how easy it was to murder her.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he's a real shit. The thing is, though, the South Korean government at this point was having a lot of problems. In January of 1987, things were pretty bad. South Korea was pretty oppressive. Mm-hmm. And the police officer had brutally murdered a student during an interrogation, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
And this had led to riots, basically. There were protests, justice for this student, and also to try and bring about democracy. Because at this point, South Korea wasn't a democracy.
This was one of the things we found out a lot about when we went to the museums in South Korea, because I did not know that South Korea wasn't a democracy the whole time.
Yeah.
It was a military dictatorship for a lot of its existence.
Yeah, this is true. We are actually, in this point, we are in the Fifth Republic
Fantastic.
Of South Korea.
Which is still a military dictatorship?
I don't believe this one is. I'm not entirely sure. I didn't go that far into it.
That's fair.
I don't think it's like the famous military dictatorship that we looked at.
But it looked like things were really bad for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah, but it was supported by the US.
Yes. And this was a pretty rough time. And as I said, like, there were protests, there were riots. The government was basically like, things are looking a little bit spicy.
Yeah.
So they hear this story and they're basically like, okay, we are going to help you, Yoon Tae-shik.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to back up your story because the version you tell basically has a good South Korean man defending his country against the North,
mm-hmm.
pointing out how bad communism is and how, you know, we need to stick together in order to not be taken over by the North.
Also means that you've got a lot of really easy scapegoats at hand, because you can be like, everybody, we need to look out for traitors in our midst. Everybody, we need to look out for traitors in our midst. We need to keep an eye on that kind of thing, and we need to go back to good old-fashioned South Korean values.
Exactly.
I'm not sure what good old-fashioned South Korean values are specifically, besides like probably family and eating really nice food. But
I was going to say, it's largely food-based, isn't it? It's the thing we always say, like, watching K-dramas. It's basically a South Korean love language is feeding people.
Yeah. If you love someone, give them noodles.
Or anything, really.
Sweets.
A lot of side dishes.
Mm.
Yeah. To be fair, it is nice food.
It is nice food.
Not if you're a vegetarian or a vegan. Like, your choice is hugely diminished. But, you know, if you're not, you've got a good selection available.
For sure.
Well, the KCIA back up this story.
Mm-hmm.
Other people in government back up this story. And they end up helping him maintain this lie over the next 15 years.
Wow.
He was never interviewed by police detectives.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Every single time the police tried to interview him, the KCIA basically said, "We don't know where he is." Even when he was in prison for 2.5 years for forgery, they're basically like, "No, we have no way of contacting him."
Oh my God.
So,
but wait, didn't the police know where he was at that point?
I have absolutely no idea, but presumably not. I imagine that he basically was in the hands of the KCIA, and they were basically like, "Let us deal with it." And I don't know, took all the paperwork away or something. I don't know. I don't even think it was all the police, because it sounds like it was just like a few detectives. I have like this image of, you know, the ragtag bunch who are desperate to get at the truth. It's sort of almost like an X-Files, like Scalder and Mully.
Yeah, yeah.
Scalder and Mully?
Scalder and Mully.
Mulder and Scully.
No, Scalder and Mully are the...
the knockoff version.
The knockoff South Korean version.
Anyway, that's what I imagine. Is it's like, it's not the whole police force. It's just these few people who are basically still working this case, being like, "Hang on, can everyone else not see that it was clearly the husband who killed her?"
Yeah.
But yeah, they are frustrated at every turn. And the thing is that once Tae-shik becomes CEO of Past 21 and starts, you know, getting all this money, he starts bribing lots of people.
Great.
He bribes journalists, government officials, and various authorities with stocks in his company in exchange for various favors. And it even ends up with him having influence with President Kim at the time.
Wonderful.
So he was essentially untouchable. I don't actually know how they got him. Like, what was the moment that they sort of went, "No, we have evidence now. We are going to arrest him." It's surprisingly hard to find that much about this case. It's mostly news reports of things like the New York Times did a piece on it. And I couldn't find anywhere that actually said how, after 15 years, they basically came to the conclusion that he did it and here's the evidence.
That's a shame, because it must be kind of fascinating, especially if he was so untouchable, as you
yeah,
said.
Yeah, I have absolutely no idea, which, like I say, is a real shame. But whatever happened, he was arrested like a few months before this statute of limitations would expire. And he was put to trial for the murder of Susie Kim. Now, his defense basically tried to plead manslaughter, claiming that it was just a fight that had got heated. He had accidentally hit her and didn't mean to kill her at all.
But then he lied about it so much. Who cares?
Yeah, he also beat her repeatedly and strangled her with a belt, which... Yeah. That's not manslaughter.
But, yeah, you're not doing that accidentally.
Yeah, plus they also had, I believe, it was either recorded or written records of him, his, like, first interview with the KCIA.
Oh, my God.
Where he admitted, you know...
murdered her.
Yeah.
I straight up murdered her and it was real easy.
Yeah,
he talked about... I could murder again.
It really sounds like it. He talks about like her turning purple and is like, "I'm surprised that a person can die so easily." And it's like, "Oh, God, you're going to become a serial killer."
How do we know he's not? Maybe there were a bunch of other spies that turned up.
Well, quite possibly. But yeah, the judge wasn't having this. The jury wasn't having this. Like, the main reason the defense tried to plead manslaughter is because in South Korea, the statute of limitations for manslaughter was only 7 years.
Oh, I see.
So if they could get him charged with manslaughter, then he couldn't be charged with manslaughter.
7 years is way too short.
I know. I'm really hoping this has changed.
I mean, imagine you did a hit and run on somebody and you got away with it for 7 years. And on the 8th year, they worked out who it was.
Yeah.
And you're just like, meh.
What are you going to do? Yeah, I'm hoping that's changed.
I hope so. God.
Well, either way, that plea was rejected and Tae-shik was found guilty and sentenced to 18 years for murder. There were quite a number of people involved in this conspiracy and basically keeping this lie that Susie Kim was a North Korean spy alive.
Yeah.
I don't believe any of them, but apart from maybe one, was charged because, again, statute of limitations. There was a thing about like perverting the course of justice that had like a 3-year statute of limitation. I know, it's really short. So none of those people who actually kept this lie alive really had anything bad happen. I think one person did who was like seriously involved with it or did something else. I don't know, but...
Wow.
Yeah. What it did do, though, was expose the huge corruption that was going on in South Korean government at the time. And it was known, once this story came out, it became known as Yoongate.
Nice.
And like I said, it changed a lot of people's perceptions. At the same time, other people who are sort of analyzing the situation saw it as kind of a good thing that this came out now because it was a sign that South Korea was getting better.
Because, I see that.
You know, the story is finally being revealed and justice is finally being served. On the note of justice, you will be happy to know that Suzy Kim's family did receive damages for everything that they had suffered in the amount of the equivalent of $2.2 million.
Okay.
Which...
Yeah, all right.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's more than deserved
for
everything that they went through. And it seems like with interviews with the family, they're basically like, we're glad that justice has been done. It doesn't make up for everything. We're mostly just sorry that, you know, Susie's mother isn't around anymore to see her daughter being exonerated.
Which, that's so sad.
I know, it is. It's really sad. But I guess we can be happy that ultimately Yoon Tae-shik got arrested.
Yeah. I'm glad he got arrested.
Found guilty, sentenced to prison. I have no idea what's happened to him now because he was sentenced, I think, in 2003 to 18 years.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So presumably that's up by now. So he's out? I don't know. I can't find anything
Yoon
about
Tae-shik,
him.
Yoon Tae-shik, if you're listening, write in. Tell us about your side of things.
Actually, please don't. You sound like a shithead. But, you know, it's one of those stories that is kind of... It gets real weird when you read about it because it does kind of sound like a film. Like,
yeah.
When it's a whole like, oh, she was actually a spy and there's this whole espionage thing going on. And then it's like, no, it's actually a conspiracy that goes right to the heart of government. And it's like, that's not a thing that happens. And then you read about it and it's like, no, this is a conspiracy that goes right to the heart of government.
But it's also like, kind of a lazy conspiracy. Like, I feel like it's a conspiracy I can believe because it feels like a few people had to give it lip service once and then could really forget about it and move on with stuff.
Yeah, basically. So all they had to do was be like, yeah, so his story's true. And then whenever people are like, hey, can we talk to him? He's like, oh, no. We don't know where he is. Like, isn't he in prison?
Maybe, but
we don't know where.
It's a lot easier for this to be your conspiracy rather than like everybody to be pretending that the earth is round, you know?
Yes. Or that Australia is real. Oh God. Yeah, this is a much more believable conspiracy because it's kind of just mundane.
Yeah.
It's basically like, hey, if we go along with this guy's bullshit story, then we get good PR.
Yeah.
Like,
and only mildly good PR, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think it really stopped that much. But it was probably easier than
sorting out the major problems in South Korean society at the time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, makes
and
sense.
At the end of the day, isn't that what espionage is all about?
Sure.
Thank you for listening to That Time When.
And thank you, as always, to Kevin MacLeod for our theme song, Anachronist, as well as any other music that Barnaby's use in the podcast.
Now you go out, invest in eels, and call your wife a North Korean spy, I guess.
Bye!